Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players podcast. Today is Friday, May 22nd, 2020. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker once again for this late week show. And we have something to talk about that I'm very excited to talk about, a stakes-laden card at Churchill Downs. Unfortunately, I will not be able to talk about these races on television during my Sky Sports racing appearance on Saturday. Churchill and Sky don't have a deal, but the man I'm about to bring in is not only going to be able to talk about these races as they're happening in the afternoon on Fox Sports 1, I think, maybe 2, one of those, he'll tell us, but is going to be talking about them on a special edition of Talking Horses at 12:30 Eastern. He'll tell you which Fox that's on as well. I, of course, am talking about the man coming to us from the planet Texas. He is the people's champion. He is Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
What's going on? Yeah, I don't know exactly. I'm going to look it up while we're talking because I'm not even sure what Fox we're going to be on, but I do know that I will be making my Talking Horses debut. Not only am I going to be, I've done it Talking Horses before. I did it with Anthony Stabile when Andy Serling was off, but this is a proper Talking Horses baptism where I'll be going with Andy Serling. And oh, just to add to the pressure of it, it's going to be on Fox Sports. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's excellent. So I'm going to guess you've done maybe a little bit more prep for these races than typical races we talk about on these shows. Is that fair to say?
I mean, it's funny, like, you know, look, there's a degree of preparation for these shows and for the Fox shows that, you know, it varies, right? I mean, this is a very conversational situation. My feet aren't to the fire. If I say something wrong, we can change it and edit it. If I do it on the Fox show, it's live. I can't change it. If I call a filly a colt, or if I misspeak, or you know, the F word slips out, I'm in, you know, kind of in trouble. So it's a little bit different. Now, preparing for Talking Horses is even going to be more different, because when they throw it to me on Fox, like, I don't have to argue with anyone. Like, it's just my opinion. I say what I want to say, and then we move on. But Talking Horses, I'm sure most people that listen to this show have seen it once or twice in their lives. It's more of a back and forth discussion of why you like or dislike someone's opinion. And so, I have to be ready for that conversation. And so the degree is a little bit deeper. You know, when, like, for instance, I might dislike a horse and I can just say, I just don't see it. I don't like the horse, but I have to have a little bit more for that, for 11:30, I guess 11:30 my time. So it would be 12:30 on Saturday on FS2 Talking Horses. So that'll be fun.
I have a page here that gives us the information. May 22nd, 12:30 to 2:20 on FS2, it looks like. And then I think maybe from there you're bouncing back and forth. Actually, I thought this page was going to be a little clearer than it is, and it's not. Never mind.
Yeah, I got it. It's on Fox Sports. It's like you can actually go to Fox Sports and go to like watch, and there's actually like a live TV schedule. And so Talking Horses is going to be on FS2 at 12:30 Eastern. We're going to roll right into America's Day at the Races, where we'll start at Churchill Downs race one. There will be some Tampa Bay as well. And then at 2:30, we flip over to FS1 and we stay on FS1 all the way through until the completion of the show at 6:30 Eastern.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I'm looking forward to checking out Talking Horses. One thing a lot of the armchair critics of people who analyze, they don't really analyze, but let's just call them the armchair critics of people such as yourself, JK. Sometimes you have 15 seconds to talk about a race, and sometimes, well, in the instance of your Talking Horses appearance on Saturday, you've got a couple of minutes, and those are completely different disciplines. And it'll be fun to see you in that environment. I know my DVR will be set. I'm excited about this Churchill card. It is it's pretty darn cool to have all of this stakes racing, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it, because a lot of times we go through and things leap out, and I was struggling, frankly, with some of these races to come up with anything clever, but also struggling to just dial into dial into one or two horses. So I'm very curious to get your thoughts. Before we get to the handicapping, a little bit of an abbreviated show, because we do have a lot of programming coming up today. We've got our live stream later. If you're an early bird listening to this, please join us over at horseplayers.com. We're going to be doing a Breeders' Cup betting challenge qualifier. Breeders' Cup obviously happening at Keeneland this year. Hopefully there will be fans in attendance. We will see about that. But the Breeders' Cup betting challenge will be happening one way or the other. You can win your way in this afternoon over on horseplayers.com, and you can watch us on the live stream. If you miss the live stream, you can watch the replay over on either YouTube or just listen to the audio on our podcast channel. So you're going to be hearing more than you need from us. So we don't need to go too crazy with the show today. We're going to keep this pretty tight. But I do want to, speaking of Keeneland, mention again about this great initiative happening that Keeneland Select is fully funding for the months of May and June. It's called Nourish the Backstretch. A lot of groceries, a lot of meals being provided for backstretch workers, fully funded by Keeneland Select. Not a bad idea to support them by putting at least some, if not all, of your wagering dollars through Keeneland Select this month and next. We will keep you posted on that, and we'll get an update on how the Nourish the Backstretch initiative is going, maybe as soon as next week. Been dying to get Jim Goodman on to talk about that. That'll be a lot of fun. But with that said, I think it's time we talk about these races, JK. And it starts off, the first race we're going to talk about, the opening leg of this all stakes pick five. And what are we dealing with here? We are dealing with the Shawnee Stakes, going a mile and a 16th on the dirt. Did you have a strong opinion in this one?
Kind of. I mean, look, I don't think that that anyone else can win this race except for the four Dunbar Road or the eight She's a Julie. Obviously, Dunbar Road coming in off the layoff is a concern. I was completely against Dunbar Road in the Alabama. She proved me wrong there. She ran really good, really well, excuse me, in the Spinster. And then I liked her in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, where she ran into Blue Prize and Midnight Bisou and some others. I think Dunbar Road's going to be tough in here if she's on her game. You know, obviously, it's a comeback. Obviously, no offense to our friends at Churchill Downs, but Dunbar Road was not did not return for her four-year-old season to win the Shawnee, right? It's obviously a stepping stone to other races that she is going to be pointing towards, but Chad Brown doesn't really send him over there short. You know, Chad is 27% in his career, first off a layoff, and I would imagine that number's even higher with stakes type. So, you know, Dunbar Road, I think, is probably the most likely and the most logical. And then I guess if she doesn't win, She's a Julie has a big pace advantage in here. And I think she'll get to the front and would be hard to run down. The rest of them don't really get me going. Moonlight Garden, Chocolate Kisses, Emma, Another Broad. If they win, then I lose. And so Vault was the only other one I could get creative about. And that's just because I felt like I needed to say another horse's name. I feel like it's got to be one of the other two.
I really like She's a Julie in here. And you nailed why. I just thought from a pace perspective, Dunbar Road might be at a disadvantage to her. Dunbar Road, I also just wasn't, this is one who, and this doesn't mean anything because I haven't seen her recently, but I just remember watching her train ahead of the Breeders' Cup last year and just not being overly impressed with her as a physical individual. Now, that is not a reason to bet against a horse who's any kind of price, but maybe it's a reason for me to lean more on She's a Julie when Dunbar Road is likely going to be odds on and going to be positioned way behind She's a Julie in the early going. And you mentioned the adjective adverb good well thing, JK. I would never get on you for making that mistake, but there are some people I will criticize for making that mistake when their whole gimmick is how they're smarter than everybody else. That's extremely in the weeds reference, but maybe an inside joke, but I'm leaving it.
Yeah, I'm trying to get better. You know, just I don't want when you got the trolls under the bridge, you try not to feed them. You know what I'm saying?
That's fair. That is fair. But it's a little bit different when you know the fun loving really sharp horse player gimmick can get away with that. I'm smarter than everybody else gimmick cannot. Let's talk about race number eight, JK. You know, I said there were races that confused me in the sequence. That one was not one of them. This is the Teppan Stakes. We're going a mile on the turf for the 3-year olds, fillies, that is. And it's the return to the races of Sharing, who I think looks extremely tough in here, assuming she has developed at all off the Breeders' Cup win. I thought was going to be awful tough to down, but just looking at figures and trying to come up with something else to offer. I thought Hendy Woods was a little interesting. If this 12-1 morning line is anything like a reality, just based on looking at the figures and potentially the trip she was going to get as well, tactical speed and a little bit of an ability to finish. Those were the two that caught my eye with preference, certainly sharing being a, not telling anybody anything they can't see from the PPs, but a much more likely winner. And I thought maybe this wasn't a horrible time to try to take on Alms, who, well, literally done nothing wrong. Tricky post. And I thought maybe just looking at pace figures and internal pace matchups in here, it might not be the greatest setup for Alms. What did you think about this one?
I mean, look, I think Sharing's going to be over a bet. You know, it's just one of those deals where she's a Breeders' Cup champion. And so she's going to take money. She's got that name recognition. When you scroll through here and you look at all these names, that is without a doubt the one that jumps out and grabs you.
She's famous.
Just doing some work with looking at, like you mentioned, some of the internal situations, some of the quickening numbers. She just doesn't really, she's not a huge standout at the price that I think she's going to be in a 14 horse field with a bunch of horses coming in off of breaks, or, you know, it's just, it, there's a lot to question when it comes to her. I landed on a horse that talking to Andy Serling last night, just about any replays we wanted, he referred to as that goofy horse that you like. And that's the Ford Dominga. Dominga, I thought, was impressive on debut at Churchill Downs. She's 1-for-1 on the surface. And you know, we say it here at nauseam, it could probably even be a bingo square. She was last closing into a slow pace last time at Fairgrounds. And that's obviously a huge move up for me. It's one of those hidden trips I don't think everyone else sees. Feels like there's going to be some pace in here with Alms drawn to the outside with some tactical speed. Sharing obviously going to be involved in the pace. Outburst wire to feel last time. Feels like they're going to run a little bit. Sean Bridgemahan should be able to tuck in from that four spot, save some ground, and just try to produce one run to run by them. So Dominga's the one that is the top choice in here. Obviously, Sharing's not one that I'm going to try to get cute and toss. But Alms also is man, she's, it, I just, when I see a 14 and I see the who I think might be the best filly in the race, I think it hit it a bomb. Just because she's drawn out there, the price might drift up. Could be a great opportunity to make some money there. But Domingo will be the top choice. Alms the second choice. Sharing, just out of respect, will be the third. And then I agreed. I liked Henny Woods and I liked the six In Good Spirits. You could tell I did my four horses for Talking Horses situation.
And people have said that to me, like, why do they always have to put four horses? I've heard that there is a loyal contingent out there of superfecta players who will complain if there aren't four horses listed on those Talking Horses.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I think I don't think the purpose is we're picking four horses to win. I think the purpose is like, it's to, people don't need, if, and, you know, people don't need me to pick Dunbar Road. Right. You know, in that race, I'm going to pick Dunbar Road, obviously, and She's a Julie's going to be second. I think people want creative ideas for who they can include with that opinion in exactas and tries and supers. And that's why you put it there. It does no good to just pick one horse in that setting. So obviously I think that's probably why they do that. And I think it's probably also important to note in this running of the Teppan Stakes, there'll be a couple horses that will be, this will be a more important race for them than some others. And that's Hendy Woods, the 5 trained by Mark Cassie, and the 11 Air of Light trained by Norm Cassie. Both of those guys obviously extremely involved with Teppan in her career. I'm sure they'd like to hoist the trophy if they're doing trophies right now at Churchill.
That is a good point you made about Alms and the outside post, how it sometimes the hate can go too far. The crowd can overreact. You referenced back in 2015, the juvenile Turf Breeders' Cup winner hit it a bomb, who got it done from out there, a horse who on paper should have been whatever, 2-1, 5-2, and ended up getting 9-2 or something on the order of that. And so that is a good point. Any cleverness I feel in opposing Alms will go away if the price is suddenly 7-2. 4-1, something like that. We'll have to see. It's a tricky race. I'm still pretty happy getting stuck into to sharing, but I like your Dominga idea is clever as well. Maybe one to mess around with. And just to underline what you said about analysts and the horses underneath, in my earliest days as a player in the mid-90s, I used to do that. I would handicap and come up with whatever I thought was going to happen in the race, you know, as a novice player, typically landing on a lot of favorites. And then I'd go and I'd read in Daily Racing Form, and Dave Litvin was doing the New York analysis then, and as he did for so many years. And he'd often have some 8-to-1 shot listed third that I would then, you know, throw into my what I was doing. So I can relate to people who are doing what you say, because I've been that person back in the day. And I think it's a good point as ever with picks and things like that. I think you're much better off listening to what an analyst like JK or Andy has to say, as opposed to just trying to take picks and make the magic happen. Race number 9 at Churchill is a mile on the main track. It is the Blame Stakes. And this was one of the races, JK, that I was having trouble like making heads or tails of. Do you have a strong opinion here?
I do. I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that I do have a little bit of like this, like, pet connection with Mr. Money. So that's my top choice, but so the part of my reasoning could be a little bit like making excuses for your child's bad behavior type of deal. I thought the last race there was an excuse. I mean, obviously he ran into two good horses and Improbable and Tom's the Ta. It was off of a long layoff. It was on a sloppy racetrack. There's a million reasons why I think we can look to him running as poorly as he did. I will not and cannot get past the fact that he was running without a doubt the fastest numbers last summer as a 3-year-old. I don't care what anyone says, who he was running against. It's just, he did it on a number of occasions. He was stopping the clock as fast or faster than the best 3-year-olds that were in training. I cannot forget what happens when you let a 3-year-old turn into a 4-year-old. We saw it with Frosted. We saw it with Gunrunner. I just feel like he has to train on. He has to improve. I can understand how fillies sometimes don't do that. I can understand how 2-year-olds don't train on to 3-year-olds. But I can't think of too many situations where a really good 3-year-old, given the opportunity to run at 4, does not improve. And I just feel like he's going to continue to progress. And I feel like the last race was there was an excuse built in there. I also remember having him pretty heavily on a ticket. I played a ticket with a friend, and that friend texted me, "Why is he not on the lead?" And that's just another indication of like another reason why I think he didn't run as well as he could. He just kind of found himself in behind horses and, you know, eating dirt and sloppy dirt at that. I like Mr. Money in here. The other ones just don't really get me going. I mean, look, I guess Diamond King could win. His race was impressive last time in the stymie, but Discreet Lover to me can't. American Anthem, if Bob Baffert couldn't win with him on the dirt over 7 furlongs, I don't see how Danny Gargan's going to. Extraordinary Jerry, you know, I thought his race last time was pretty good for Todd Pletcher, but now he switches to a new barn. Don't know what to expect there. Owendale hasn't run into any really good horses and have been able to overcome that. And then Backyard Heaven was a good horse back when, you know, the Pick Six boys were still winning contests. So I don't know. I don't know. That was not planned, but damn, it was good. I don't know. I don't know where else to go in this spot. And so it made me feel good about landing on 13, Mr. Money.
Mr. Money ended up on my shortlist. I didn't like that we don't have just one not so hot race to explain, but we really have two. Now you make good excuses, and he's certainly in the mix for me, but I felt like there were, you know, maybe one or two too many questions for me to want to take him at the presumptive 4 or 5-to-1. The other horse I wanted to cotton to, but I just couldn't really at the end of the day from a race shape point of view, but I do want to get your opinion on Silver Dust, because this is a horse also who, you know, did not run well last time, but I think maybe you could say the opposite thing of what you said to Mr. Money. Maybe this one didn't like being on the lead, especially off that weird break. Pace figure wise, race design wise, I'm not sure I can figure it out for him, but Silver Dust is one I want to keep in my imaginings if, as I imagine he might, he goes off at double digit odds in this spot. Do you give him any count at all?
I don't, but here's why. I understand what you're saying. I completely, but here's why I'm against. When you look at Timeform US, for all of our Timeform US users and believers, when you look at his last, you know, 5, 6, 7 races, you see a lot of 2s and 3s and 1s, meaning that he's forwardly placed. You see more blue than you see, you know, you see a lot of blue and you don't see any red. So for me, he's been close to favorable pace scenarios and he either hasn't won or he's won against horses that don't really get my, you know, get my blood flowing. Gunnet, Blended Citizen, those horses don't really excite me. So those are the wins that he got close to a pace that wasn't marked as red. Not that it was slow. It wasn't blue, but it wasn't red. So facing lesser and not really being pressed to get those wins, facing better and having it his own way and still couldn't get it done. I just don't. I think he's a cut below probably what I believe Mr. Money is to be.
That's what I meant when I had said the questions about race design. When you see a horse who is in touch to slower paces, and then you put them in a scenario where they're projected to be like 7th or 8th fastest in a fast pace, it's tricky. But I'm keeping him on my list if the price gets crazy. Funny enough, the more I look, the more and this is so boring, and I pick him with no confidence, but it does set up pretty well for Owendale. Is there a chance the 3-1 morning line is inaccurate and you can get a 7-2, 4-1 on Owendale, or is he just sure to be overbet as one of the famous horses in this group?
I mean, look, I try not to be critical of morning lines for two reasons. One, because they don't matter. Who gives a damn? That's the first reason I try not to be critical. The second is because it's very hard. So, but I mean, it's just name recognition. I mean, I guess there's a way he could be bet like that. I don't think he's going to be the favorite. He hasn't run in 176 days. But sure. I mean, I guess he could end up being the favorite. It doesn't feel like that to me. So feels like a horse that wants longer and he wants a big setup. If he's going to run this short, maybe he'll get it, you know, with Mr. Money and Diamond King drawn to the outside. American Anthem obviously has shown speed in his career, Global Campaign. There's a reason he's going to get that pace. But from a horse who's coming off a layoff, who I think wants longer, who I'm not even really sure how good he is anyways, I'm not taking him as the favorite because I'm thinking the race is going to then fall apart.
Yeah, my first gut was to be against him thinking he was going to be the favorite, but maybe I was being a little influenced by the morning line. The more I look, I think the key thing that really popped him in my head was that observation I made about Silver Dust, who's usually on or near-ish, you know, stalker type, having the 7th or 8th fastest pace figures. That just made me think that maybe it will bring the extra stamina to help Owendale into play. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to pick Owendale. I'm going to keep Silver Dust and Mr. Money on my list, either as backups, horizontals, or as horses to use.
Head to head.
You want to do a head to head Owendale, Mr. Money?
Yeah, you got the shorter price too.
Let's do it. Let's do it. I think it's a
definitely
good
got him beat.
Yeah, it's an interesting head to head actually. I think because. I mean, I know what you're saying about Mr. Money and horses training on, but I mean, it does have, I mean, sometimes it just, they go through a period where they, you know, there's an old Jonathan Shepherd quote about horses being like sticks of butter and big efforts can take some of that butter off. And at the end of the day, sometimes you just add a horse. And I sure hope that's not the case with Mr. Money. I think he's really cool. I like him. I used to like him a lot more than you. And it's funny how you've had some apostasy when it comes to Mr. Money. I remember you questioning some things about him, if I'm not mistaken, at some point and saying something.
I don't know. John the Clocker, not before John the Clocker alerted me to Mr. Money, before he ran at Churchill, what race was that? I believe it was the Pat Day Mile.
Matt Wynn, maybe?
No, before that, Pat Day Mile. When he won the Pat Day Mile by 5, 7-1, he was like an A horse that day. That was all. That was a John the Clocker special. Here's what I'll say:
they're 7-1 and win like they're 1-7. That's a pretty good pick.
I'd love to see and look. I'd love for our listeners they when they participated, so much fun. I'd love for someone to find me a horse who ran 3 triple digit buyers as a 3-year-old, even 2, let's say 2 triple digit buyers as a 3-year-old and did not train on at 4, a male horse, a colt, on a colt or a gelding or whatever, not fillies, because you know they can get a little bit finicky, and not 2-year-old to 3-year-old, 3-year-old to 4-year-old. I don't know if it exists. I'm sure it does somewhere, but I can't think of one that was good, that was consistently good at 3, that came, that had an opportunity to come back at 4 and wasn't good at 4.
See if anybody can find anything out there in the world that meets that. Meanwhile, we'll do our Mr. Money Owendale head-to-head. I'll try to improve my all-time record against you in head-to-heads to 15 and 147. Race number 10 is the Matt Wynn mile and a 16th on the dirt for 3-year-old colts. This one sees the return to the races of Maxfield, and I'm not opposing him. Work Tab looks really strong. This horse was so impressive last year. I feel like there's enough pace to set up his late run. I'm excited to see this one return, JK. Now, as someone who is not afraid to get stuck into short prices, where are you with this horse?
Oh, there's two horses that I really like a lot in here, and they're the two shorties. I mean, I think Pneumatic could be any type, and I'll kind of talk about that in a second, but I'll start with Maxfield. You know, it's funny because I think people that are quick to oppose Maxfield are doing it from a good place. They're doing it from that place of undefeated 2-year-old, you know, overbet and doesn't train on to at 3, that whole thing. But the difference between Maxfield is he did himself zero favors as a 2-year-old. He missed a break in both of his starts. He comes from way out of it. It's not like he's some Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert freak who like pops, no one's in his way, and he wires fields. He never has any adversity. Like both of his races, he overcame adversity. And so a horse like that, to me, there's a lot more room for improvement. And although, you know, XBTV hasn't been catching Maxfield's works like we're so accustomed to being able to see, Jose Ortiz did put on like a GoPro for Maxfield's last work, or 2 works ago, I believe it was, where he broke from the gate. You can find that on Jose's social media, Instagram and Twitter. And he popped. I mean, it's hard to tell in context, right? He could be breaking next to the slowest horse in the history of America, but he popped out of the gate just fine. And he just moves so efficiently, and just, I mean, it's such a cool video. I don't care who the horse was, you'd have to be impressed by it. It's just such a cool video. But so for me, it feels like Maxfield's going to train on. The other thing is, if you look at Time Form US, Maxfield in October ran a 105 Time Form US. Now, there's some horses that, you know, New York Traffic ran 115, and Pneumatic ran 108 last time. But if you think, man, that's a long time ago, October. That's 231 days. And if you get that normal progression from 2 to 3, it's not just 2 to 3. This is 2 to like 3-3, like in May, right? I think there's an opportunity that he could really jump up. Now, is he the singleable type? Not for me, but he's definitely one that I'm going to use and not try to get cute and beat. As far as Pneumatic
type, you know, that was as far as I'd go. I didn't think he was stone cold, just because, like you say, there are, you know, there are wise guy reasons you're supposed to have some money against the horse, because who knows? But
right.
But tell me your case on, other than the obvious, tell me your case on Pneumatic.
Well, Pneumatic is one that I've been impressed about two things about him. He relaxed and sat off of a slow pace going a mile, and he relaxed and sat off of the pace in a sprint. And I think that as the more and more I am involved in this game, and I see talented horses, and I see how important the mental part is, and how these mental ding dongs can get in their own way. And Pneumatic in his young career has already proven that he will listen to the rider. He's down on the inside, so you know he's going to get a good trip. He's not going to put himself into some crazy situation. He doesn't have to be on the lead. He's in a break running away from there. He's going to sit in the pocket. And when it's time to run, while the rest of them are going to end up running a mile and in an eighth because of losing ground, he's going to run a true mile and a 16th, and he's going to be tough from down in there saving ground. He'll get, you know, and so I think that he could be any kind. And very talented looking horse. If you watch both of his works, both of his races, it's just very, very impressive. So to me, it has to be one of those two. You know, I remember, and I don't remember if you remember this or not, Pete, but I remember when the Louisiana Derby was over, everyone in the world thought the pace was really slow, Wells Bayou set. And the way that Wells Bayou subsequently ran, it suggests that to be the case. But then when I pulled up the PPs on Time Form, it was coded red. And so I don't know So my point is that conventional, the old thought was that, major Fed shake some action ran well in the Louisiana Derby. But now that I'm seeing it coded red, now that you would think that's the opposite. They didn't run that well.
Flattered, so, in other words, maybe flattered by a pace.
Right.
And that's interesting. While we talk about this, I'm going to look at some other pace figures that might weigh in on this topic, because there are some different ways of calculating the different systems of looking at pace that might suggest one thing or another that I'm just curious to compare and contrast. And yeah, it's interesting. It's inconclusive. Looking at the racingflow.com data, it's inconclusive. It had it much more in the realm of neutral. But what you're saying is that you would have before been inclined to be pro major Fed and now inclined to be a little bit against potentially.
Yeah, I just want to call them, it is what it is on paper. It's nothing. It's not good. It's not bad. It's not worse. It's not better. It's just, it is what it is. New York Traffic once upon a time was a horse I was really interested in. He's going to have to prove it to me. Safi kind of went cold and he's winning some short price horses, but he's not been winning at the rate that he was. Necker Island, I think, is a little bit interesting at a price underneath. So I think my prices underneath are going to be like the 7 Necker Island, the 12 Major Fed, the 11 Attachment Rate, I think, is also interesting. But my top choices, without a doubt, is Maxfield and Pneumatic. And I'll use both of them as A horses and multi-race bets. Hope to survive this race, not worry about equity in this race, just try to survive it in the middle of the sequence, and some other opinions elsewhere hopefully can pick up some more equity.
One other thing that makes me like Maxfield particularly, just looking at the workout tab, it just looks really good in the Barry Meadow book, the new Barry Meadow book, which is fantastic. And if you're a handicapping book person, this book, impressive use of data. Ken Massa from HTR did a great job helping Barry run these statistical analyses of all these different aspects of racing to test all these theories. The book is called The Skeptical Handicapper, I'm pretty sure. And one of the biggest pieces of signal he found was these fast 5 furlong works. Basically, whatever statistic you can devise to test, if you go back and then look at it at when the horse has one of these 5 furlong bullet works, I forget exactly what the criteria they use, maybe in the last 2, the numbers improve like across the board. Very, very impressive. And just, just looking at it and seeing what the horse has been up to and then knowing that little piece of harder data, I'm very curious to see how he does.
What'd you say the name of that book was?
It is called The Skeptical Handicapper, JK.
I have an idea for a book for you.
Hit me.
The sociopathic handicapper. You
manipulate people to change rules in contests so you can win them? Is that a chapter in the sociopathic?
You get on Twitter, you can write a book in 20 minutes.
Oh my goodness. There are a lot of them out there, aren't they? It's not just those guys. There are a lot of weirdos out there. Speaking of books, man, you've gotten me so pumped for Easy Game and the chapter in that book. I have interviewed Marshall Graham multiple times, and he's always been great. I've never heard him as good as in this marathon interview you did with him this week. He's talking about stuff he's never talked about publicly. It is, when I say must listen, and believe me, don't take this as a compliment, because it's really nothing to do with you and everything to do with him. It might be the best horse racing podcast I've ever heard.
And the funny part about it is, man, like I was thinking about this morning after you texted me that, I started kind of getting stressed out. I was like, Michael McCarthy, Gary Stevens, Richie Migliori, Duke, Travis, Marshall, what the hell am I going to do next week?
You've built yourself up. You've got quite an act to follow here.
This is just a real quick pause. I do have this idea, and I've stole a lot of this stuff from Joe Rogan and just the way that he kind of laid out his whole thing. He has a podcast every once in a while where he just has like his boys on, like, and they're all kind of famous, and they're like comedians. So it works how he did it. Not just some random dudes, but like, I've thought about like having our, I have a couple of group texts that I think would be funny to just merge those people on, and just like
with
the conversations that happen on the group text, they just happen for 2 hours on the show. So it'd be like me, you, Sean Borman, and Jake Ballas just have one where we're just like, Jake's doing his thing, Sean's being grumpy and not being nearly as as inappropriate as he sometimes could be. Yeah. And then, you know, well, I also have the one with
people arrest. I think all four of us could have gotten arrested at one point or another.
And then I got the one with Nick Tamro, Travis Stone, Jack Jenkins, Dan Kovaleski, and Eric Bialik. That's obviously too many for one show, but that would be funny too, just to let those guys go crazy. But so we'll see. That's my backup plan when I get into a bind.
So, right. Sometimes you just have to do something completely different to like reset expectations. That could be a great way to do that. I'm also looking forward. I don't know what banner it will be under, but when we do our World Horse Players Tour Insiders show, telling stories that have never been told from that experience and perhaps doing episode commentary, we'll see what we want to do. It's that'll be a fun, ridiculous show we can do sometime in the near future. But
well, one more thing, real fast. There's two I'm really excited about doing that. I'm starting to like try to find out how. I know one person that can do one of them. I got to figure out the other one. I want to do one with a starter, like an assistant starter, like where I just ask him questions about the gate and ask him, you know, tell stories about crazy things happening in the gate. And did it just like, I think that would be really like entertaining just to have a conversation about that. And then a track man, like someone who like maintains the track, just asking a million of questions, just like, what about this? And how about that? How does this work? Why do you use it? You know, just all those things.
Track man would be amazing. Get somebody, my best advice off the top of my head, maybe it's not my best advice. My off the top of the head advice is get somebody who's retired, who has no politics to deal with. Because anybody currently working is going to probably have, you know, bosses listening. And there's a lot of beliefs among racetrack executives. Maybe they're even correct that track biases are like a bad thing for handle. So many track men are going to be, you know, somebody current I could see being defensive and or listened to in a way that you can't get the good gas. But if you could get somebody who's like, you know, done it for years and is still involved enough to be observing what's going on, oh my goodness, that could be one of the best from a handicap Capper's point of view, that could be one of the best shows. These are great ideas. This was a very good production meeting in the middle of the show, JK. I think we've outdone ourselves.
I'm doing what I can do.
Race 11, the pay leg at Churchill Downs on Saturday is the War Chant. We've got three-year-old colts going a mile on the turf. $100,000 in the pot. JK, how are we going to get paid?
Well, you got to ask our boys from New York. Look, when I look at this race, the first thing I say is like, this is like one of those races where there is so much speed signed on for this turf race. It has to fall apart. But then I look over and I look at the jockeys and the trainers, and there's a whole bunch of names that I've seen in New York at Saratoga when I felt the exact same way I feel about it now, and they go 25 to the half. So, you know, you got Kendrick, you got Paco, you got Jose, you got Bridgemahan, you got Johnny, Flo, Joel, Ricardo. Ricardo's not going to – he'll go to the front. Paco will too. Gaffleon, and then you got all these – so if they run like they're supposed to run with a turf sprinter drawn to the outside, speed at every little impasse of the race, they're supposed to fly in this race and set it up. And man, if that's what happens, I absolutely love field pass. If they run like they're meant to run, little California speed in there with smooth, like it's straight, or like straight. So I landed on field pass. I thought field pass was the one that I wanted here. Had the numbers that I liked, coming from out of it. He won the Jeff Ruby stake, which is one of my favorite things to say. And then, two races back, closed into a slow pace and got the job done down at Gulfstream. Okay, closed into a slow pace at Gulfstream and got the job done. Now he's going to run on a real turf course, and he's going to have real pace to close into. He gets Jose, Mike Maker. We've sung our praises about Mike Maker. I love this horse in here. He ran well enough in the Bourbon as a two-year-old. He's got two-year-old form. I love field passing here. And then the alternative, I think.
He's not a plotter, too. He's not a plotter. Like, he can't.
He'll stay tactical.
Stick close. Like, even if they don't go as fast as they're supposed to go, he can get a great trip.
Yeah, and if they do that thing where they all grab and he ends up sitting third, he'll still win.
Right.
Which is great. That never happens. We have a horse that, like, no matter what they do, he's going to win. To me, it feels like no matter what they do, he's going to win. I could be wrong about that, but I really like him in here. And then my kind of crazy alternative is the one South Bend down on the inside. I think when you're looking for races to fall apart and you feel like they might fall apart, finding the best closer drawn to the inside is like kind of like this little pet trick I'm working on, where you know he's going to save ground on both turns. down from the inside. And so not only is he going to have pace to close into from an energy standpoint, he's going to travel the shortest distance of anyone in the race until he circles late. But I don't mind him circling late when everyone else is tiring.
You make good points about South Bend. I also love that angle of just trying to find the best closer who's going to be able to get some kind of trip. I'm absolutely with you on Field Pass being the most likely winner. Am I nuts to give Bodie Cream a little bit of a chance in here under similar logic to what you were saying about South Bend at a price that I imagine will be even higher than that one? I was thinking Bodie Cream might be 20-1.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think in Houston, he got a pretty good setup that day. They ran in front of him in there. I mean, he's got all red time form US. So that's always kind of to me. But sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't hate the horse at a big price. I tell you a horse I like at a price is the 11 Street Ready. I thought that horse's last race was unbelievably impressive, for Ian Wilkes. So I think that he's, watch that replay for Street Ready. Last time at
Street Ready's got a few excuses in a row, in truth. Looking at, you know, tough posts and wide trips and just the general Wilkes way of training isn't to necessarily bring them back to the races fully formed. So you can probably excuse the layoff as well. And then you look at how wide the horse has been. This is Street Ready is a horse who's improving for sure. I like Street Ready a lot to be on the short list as well.
Right. I can't design the race with as much speed that's in here. Even if a couple take back, this one takes back, that one takes back, this one goes, this one doesn't. He's still going to end up being four wide on both turns.
He's going to be four wide on both turns again.
And so, and don't get me wrong, he still might win. And he's a horse that I will absolutely use as you know, like Field Pass is not like a single A to me or anything like that. Like my A horses would be like Field Pass, South Bend, and Street Ready. And then maybe like, you know, the speed of the speed as my B horse, like just in case.
You want to press Field Pass in that situation somehow? I mean, because I feel like you're going to end up inefficient a little bit there.
I've been doing this thing lately in those situations like that where it's like I don't want to use Street Ready as a B and then I have three B's in my run and I miss it. So what I'll do is
plus comes in to me.
Yeah, so I'll open up a second ticket maker window, right? And I'll open up a second one, and then in that second one I'll just single A Field Pass. So that'll be kind of my press, you know?
I love that. That's all. That's exactly what I was getting at. You can still have all the same coverage with those others. But for me, the key thing would just be I wouldn't necessarily need to have more coverage with Field Pass. I would definitely want to have it more times, if that makes any sense.
100%.
I don't know. I'm looking more and I'm tempted if it was a UK race, I think my bet would be a Street Ready each way situation. Cause I think the post could maybe be overcome to the point of getting a minor award. If you made me pick one just on top, you had to make a win bet, I'd probably say Field Pass. He's probably too likely of a winner for me to not like technically put him on top, but this is a race where I feel like you want to see the board and you want to let the board dictate the play because there's so many, you know, I think you've given a good rundown of some of the horses that have chance, a few of whom could be major, major prices. And, you know, a horse like Bodie Cream, if 10-1, no interest at all, 20-1, I start to get like, okay, well, I want to do something there. I like it better when I can come on here and just say, this is my opinion. I like this horse, this sequence, these two races in particular, the Owendale race and this race, very, very hard for me to do that and just try to get stuck into one horse.
And just, if I didn't mention this 30-1 shot morning line, I'd feel like an idiot. I think Bahama Breeze has a little bit of a shot too. A horse.
Show your work on that one.
Yeah. Just, you know, I thought that Bahama Breeze had a trip last time. Watch that race. Back when he was a 2-year-old, and I'm assuming there was a situation. I don't know if there's like a private purchase or I don't know, but the horse is, it's now with Rusty Arnold and Ashbrook Farm and Bo, our friend Bo Bromigen, who is the group that owned Concrete Rose. So I know. So anyways, there could be a shot here. That's not an inside information or anything. The horse looks interesting off a trip as a 2-year-old. If the horse improves a little bit, the horse could, you know, could get the job done.
One to throw in at a massive number from JK And that's it. We're through this sequence. You have a quick closing thought, or should I let you and Austin get back to what I hope is a day of fun until we do our live stream later?
No, I think that's it. We'll see you guys. See you guys this afternoon. I don't know when this is going to go up, but if you there's probably time to get in the $20 feeder. If the $179 is too much, there's a $20 feeder that starts at, I'm going to tell you, because it starts at 12:35 Eastern. So you got a couple hours. I'd imagine this will be up in time.
If you're an early bird, you can do that. I should have mentioned this is a direct qualifier to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge that we are running today. It's a short for a direct qualifier with 8 races in the sequence, but I think it's going to be fun. It's certainly an interesting experiment. Matt Bernier, unfortunately, not able to join us today, but JK and I will take you through, and it should be a lot of fun. JK, thank you so much. We will check you out there and on Fox Sports tomorrow, especially on Talking Horses. Thank you also once again to our partners over at Keeneland Select. We're big fans of this Nourish the Backstretch initiative, which they are fully funding for the months of May and June, giving away groceries and meals to the folks who take care of the equine athletes who make our game go. Please support Keeneland Select. Most of all, I want to thank all of you, our listeners, who make these shows so much fun to do. Leave us a voicemail if you have a question. We'll do a voicemail show next week, 732-893-7155 for that one. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.